We're on Lamed Zayin and Aleph at the top, beginning with the words of Minayin Shebe'ana. Our Mishnah presented the Vidoy confession that the Kohen Gadol would recite over his Chatos bull offering. While performing the Smicha, leaning on the animal offering with both of his hands, the Kohen Gadol would recite the words, Ana Hashem, please Hashem. And when it says Hashem, it means he would use the Shem HaMefarash, spelled Yod and Hey and Vav and Hey, that normally cannot be pronounced. And the Kohen Gadol would then continue with the rest of the language of the confession, in which he would confess he and his household have sinned, and Hashem, please atone. Where today begins by asking, Uminayin Shebe'ana, what is the scriptural basis for beginning the confession with this language of Ana Hashem, of saying, please Hashem, and then continuing with the rest of the confession? Where it explains the basis is as follows, Nemar Kan Kapara, here in Acharemos, in reference to the confession under discussion, the pasuk uses the language of kapara. It says v'chiper ba'ado v'yad beisom v'nemar lahalon b'chorev kapara. And there, in the context of Moshe Rabbeinu's confession, his prayer for Klal Yisrael in the aftermath of the sin of the Egel Hazav, we find the language of kapara, as it states there, ulai achapra ve'ad chataschem. So we connect these two passages and we say, mal halan be'ana afkan be'ana. Just as we find there, when Moshe Rabbeinu actually appealed to Hashem for forgiveness for the people, he opened with this word, ana, as it says there, ana chata ha'am hazeh, afkan be'ana. So to hear the Kohen Gadol's confession over the chatas and bull offering must begin with this language of please. Hence, he begins, Ana Hashem, and then continues with the rest of Visi, Pashati, Chatasi, etc. The Gemara inquires further, Uminayin Sheva Shem, is the basis in the Pasuk for the Kohen Gadol, including the Shem HaMefarash, Shem's actual name that normally, again, we don't pronounce in the Vidoy. The Gemara explains, Nemra Kan Kapara, Venemra Be'egla Rufa Kapara. Again, here, in the context of the confession under discussion, the pasuk uses the language of kapara. We find such a language in the context of the law of egla rufa, which applies when a murdered corpse is found and where we've not apprehended the murderer, so we measure to the nearest town, and the Torah says that town bears some of the responsibility. They perhaps could have prevented this from happening, and so they perform the rite of the egla rufa, which includes decapitating a calf in the back of the neck, and different psukim are recited by the elders of the city, and part of that language includes the words Kapir le'amcha Yisrael asher padisa Hashem. So we link up these two passages and derive Malalon b'Hashem, just as there in the case of Egla Rufa, Hashem's name is invoked. Again, as it says there, Kapir le'amcha Yisrael asher padisa Hashem. That's included in the language that the Zikne Ir recite. Afkan b'Hashem. So to hear, the Kohen Gadol mentions the name of Hashem in the confession. We have stated that the language of atonement is found in these three places. The Kohen Gadol's Vidoy, Moshe Rabbeinu's appeal to Hashem for forgiveness for the sin of the Egel Azav, and in the context of the rite of Egla Rufa. So theoretically, we should connect any one of these to all of the others to establish that they all share each other's details in terms of how to express what needs to be expressed. So the Gemara has a question. Amar Abaye. Abaye points out, Bishlama chorev mi'egla rufa lo yalev. I don't have a question as far as why a drasha isn't made linking Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillah at Har Sinai to the language of the tefillah that is used in the case of egla rufa to establish that Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillah ought to have included the Shem HaMefarash, Hashem's ineffable name. That wouldn't be a valid objection here for my dehave have. What happened, happened. Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillah was a one-time event that is now in the past. So there's obviously no point of asking, well, why don't we make a connection between Moshe's tefillah and Egla Rufa to instruct us as to the correct contents of Moshe's tefillah? Well, Moshe's tefillah was Moshe's tefillah. So Abaye says, I don't have any question regarding why we don't make that specific derivation. Egla Rufa, Telev Mechorev. But there is a question here of why drasha isn't made linking the tefillah of Egla Rufa to that of Chorev of Har Sinai, Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillah, to establish that the word Ana ought to have been used in the tefillah of Egla Rufa just as it was in the case of Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillah at Har Sinai. Abaye says, Vechitema Hachinami. If you'll attempt to answer that, indeed, that is the case. Perhaps the elders of the city must include the word ana in their tefillah, but it's not so for v'hatanan. We learn in the Mishnah Masechta Sota that HaKohanim Omrim Kapir La'amcha Yisrael. The Mishnah says, what tefillah is recited for Egla Rufa? The words, atone for your nation Yisrael, v'ilu bi'ana lo ka'amar. The word ana is not part of the tefillah, but seemingly it should be. It's not connecting this tefillah with Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillah. The Gemara acknowledges that kash indeed this appears to be a difficulty. The Gemara doesn't offer an answer to Abai's question. The Mishnah described that upon hearing Hashem's ineffable name, the Shem HaMeforash Ve'inona Na'acharav, everybody present responded by declaring Baruch Shem Kevod Malchuso Le'olam Va'ed. They responded with this phrase, praising the name of Hashem. The Gemara presents the source for this requirement. Tanya was taught in Ebraisa, Rebbe Omer. Rebbe says, the Pasuk in Hazinu states, Ki Shem Hashem Ekra Havu Godel Elokeinu. When I call out the name of Hashem, ascribe greatness to our God. Rebbe darshens the Pasuk that, in effect, Amr Lahem Moshe Yisrael, through this Pasuk, Moshe Rabbeinu said to Yisrael, B'shosh Animaz Kershmo Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Whenever I mention the name of Hashem, the Shem HaMefarsh, Atem Havu Godel, shall ascribe greatness to him. Hence, upon hearing the Shem HaMefarsh from the Kohen Gadol, the people respond with this phrase of blessing and praise. Another source, Hananya ben Achir of Yeshua Omer, says, the Pasuk in Mishle states, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. Nidarshans, Amr Lahem Navi Li Yisrael, the Navi, Shlomo HaMelech, through this Pasuk says to Yisrael, that Mishasha Nimazker Tzadik Olomim Atem Tenu Bracha. Whenever I mention the righteous one of all of the worlds, whenever I mention the name of the Almighty, Atem Tenu Bracha, you should recite the words of a Bracha. So this could also be a source for this halachic requirement. So the Kohen Gadol has recited the Vidoy on his Chatas, bull offering, and now it is time for the lottery of the two goats to determine which shall be offered as a Chatas Lashem, and which shall go Lazazel, which one will be the scapegoat. That's the one over which the Kohen Gadol recites the confession that addresses all of the sins of all of Klal Yisrael. So the Mishnah describes, Balo l'mizrach ha'azara l'tzvon ha'mizbeach. Kohen Gadol, at this point, he was closer to the Heichal when he was reciting the confession over the bull. He now makes his way east toward the Sharniknar entrance to the Azara, where the two goats will be ready just within the Sharniknar entrance. And all of this happens to the north of the Mizbeach, meaning that the Kohen Gadol at this point doesn't stand due east of any part of the wall of the Mizbeach. He must clear the Mizbeach, he has to be north of it, because the service he's doing now must be conducted in the northern section of the courtyard. And as the Gemara will explain, the Tana of our Mishnah is of the opinion that no part of the Mizbeach was in the north section of the Azar. It was completely in the south section. Hence, the Kohen Gadol will be standing north of the Mizbeach, as well as east of it at Shar Niknar. The Mishnah describes further, Hasagan miyamino v'rosh beisav mismolo. The deputy Kohen Gadol would be to the Kohen Gadol's right, and the head of whatever family of Kohanim was scheduled to serve in the Beis HaMikdash that day was to the Kohen Gadol's left, Bisham Shnei Sirim. And the two goats were there. V'kalpi ha'itz ha'sham u'ba shnei gorolos, and a chest was there which contained the two lots, one of them labeled Lashem and the other labeled Lazazel. As will be described later, the Kohen Gadol will draw these lots to determine the designation of the goats. The Mishnah adds that shel eshkeroa hayu, the lots used to be made of boxwood, v'asan ben gamla shel zav. When Yeshua ben Gamla served as Kohen Gadol, he decided to make them out of gold. On account of this, the Chachamim would recall Yeshua ben Gamla with praise. His enactment was met with approval from the Chachamim. The Mishnah digresses to mention other examples of this. Ben Katan also Yud Beis Dad L'Kiyor. Ben Katan, the Kohen Gadol, decided to upgrade the Kiyor wash basin, where of course the Kohanim have to wash the hands and feet before entering the Beis HaMikdash to perform the Avodah. He refashioned it so that it had 12 spouts, shelohayelo l'shnayim, when before it only had two. The Gemara will explain he did so so that the entire party of 12 Kohanim coming in the morning to participate in the Tamid offering would all be able to perform the mitzvah of washing the hands and feet before the avodah at the same time. V'yafu asa muchni l'kiyar shelo yomeimav nifsalin belina. But Kot made another contribution. He had a machine made, which they were able to use to lower and raise the kiyar wash basin underground each night, and this prevented the waters of the kiyar. Kiyar is a klisharis, of course, and so it imbues the contents of the water with sanctity that it makes that water subject to different disqualifications, including that if it's left overnight, it becomes disqualified. So Mikutin's solution was, yeah, this machine made that enabled them to lower the entire kiyar underground into a spring, so that the waters inside of the kiyar were connected to the spring, thereby circumventing any problem of the waters, you know, once that's detached from the ground, once it's just sitting in the kiyar. If that's left overnight, it becomes disqualified. But here, no, it was connected to the spring, so it didn't become disqualified. And another person who made a positive contribution to the base of Migdash was Munbaz HaMelech. Hayosa koyados hakelim shel yom kippurim shel zav. He had all of the handles of the different base of Migdash utensils used on Yom Kippur, made out of gold, and Hilane Imo, his mother, Hilane Osasa Nevresha Shazav al Pesach Hechel, added a golden candelabrum or chandelier above the entrance to the Hechel. She also had a golden tablet made upon which the Sota passage of the Torah was written. And the benefit of this was that if they needed to go to the Sota procedure, which includes copying down the relevant psukim of the Sota passage onto a parchment, they wouldn't have to get a Sefer Torah to copy down the psukim. They could use this is a golden tablet that Eleni made and copied the psukim from that. And finally, Niknar Nasu Nisim Ledalso Sof. Great miracles occurred for Niknar, who donated a beautiful copper doors for the eastern entrance of the Azara. Where we'll describe how Niknar persevered greatly in order to get the doors successfully Teretz Yisrael to the base of Migdash. A great miracle happened that it made his goal and desire a reality. The mission now states, V'hoyu maskir no son l'shvach. Because of the named contributions, the Chachamim recalled the individuals mentioned above with praise. Where it begins by examining the Mishnah statement that in order for the Kohen Gadol to ensure that he is in the north section of the Azara when performing the lottery over the goats, he had to be clear of the Mizbeach. He had to be standing north of the Mizbeach. He couldn't, in other words, be due east of the Mizbeach. The Gemara observes, Midikam l'tzvon ha-Mizbeach mechalal the Mizbeach lav b'tzafen kai. This indicates that in the opinion of the Tana of our Mishnah, no part of the Mizbeach stood in the north half of the Azara. Hence, again, the Kohen Gadol couldn't be due east of the Mizbeach, for then, by definition, he wouldn't be in the north part of the Azara, which is where he had to be at this time. The Gemara points out, Mani, who then is the apparent author of our Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakovi. That would be the Tana of Eliezer ben Yaakov of the following Braisa, the Tanya. For it was Tana ne Braisa. The Pasuk in Parshas Vayikra states, the person Mashach, the Karban Ola, at the foot of the Mizbeach, and then it says, Tzafona lifnei Hashem, to the north before Hashem. Tana focuses on the Pasuk's wording of to the north. He darshins this language, teaches us, Shiyei Tzafon Kulo Panoi, the north section of the Azara must be completely empty, that is, even the Mizbeach itself cannot occupy any part of the northern section of the Azara. Divi Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. These are the words of Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. He apparently is the author of our Mishnah. The Gemara objects, V'harresha Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon hi. We concluded in yesterday's discussion regarding the anonymous Mishnah, which appears just before our Mishnah, so presumably it's the same author the whole time. We said that the previous Mishnah is in accordance with the other opinion of Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon, who understands that part of the Mizbeach did occupy the northern section. For we pointed out yesterday that the previous Mishnah implies that the Kohen Gadol's bull offering may be slaughtered between the Mizbeach and the Ulam and the Hechel building. Now, the bull offering is a Karban Chatas. It's a Kachikachim offering. So that must be slaughtered, of course, in the northern section of the Azara. So put that together, and that all implies that the section between the Mizbeach and the Ulam is within the north section of the Azara. That obviously assumes that the Mizbech itself, at least partially, was in the north section of the Azara. So that analysis doesn't fit with what we're saying now. The Gemara concedes that indeed we must retract what was stated yesterday, and we must now explain as follows. That really, Kula Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, the Tana, the Mishnah, consistently follows the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, who again holds that no part of the Mizbeach was found in the north section of the Azara. As regards the language of the previous Mishnah, which doesn't seem to fit with such an understanding, V'tani, the answer is, here's how you should teach the previous Mishnah. The Mishnah there doesn't literally mean that the Kohen Gadol, with his Chatas offering, would be situated between the Ulam and the Mizbeach. Rather, B'bein Ulam ala Mizbeach, the Kohen Gadol stood in the area that was opposite, that is, to the north of the actual area between the Ulam and the Mizbeach. According to that reading, the Tana, the Mishnah, could hold consistently throughout that no part of the Mizbeach was actually in the north section of the Azara. The Mishnah described Hasagan v'yamino v'rosh beisav b'smolo. The deputy Kohen Gadol would stand to the right of the Kohen Gadol, and the head of the beisav that was scheduled to serve that day in the Beis Hamikdash would be to the Kohen Gadol's left, where it presents a relevant teaching. Amar Rav Yehuda, Rav Yehuda said, Amahalech li min rabo harei zeh bur. Who walks alongside his teacher to his right is a boor. He's not showing proper manners. It's not respectful to walk to the Rebbe's right, for he appears to be like equating himself with the Rebbe. It's not proper to walk to his superiors, his Rebbe's right. Gemara points out, Tanan hasagan v'yamino v'rosh beisav b'smalo. But our Mishnah says that the deputy Kohen Gadol, so obviously is of a lower ranking than the Kohen Gadol himself, would stand to the Kohen Gadol's right. V'otanya, also, there's a braisa that states as follows. Shlosha shayu mahalchin baderech. If three people traveling along a road, walking, harav be'emtza, Gadol b'yamino, v'katan mismalo. If it's a Rebbe and then two Talmidim, one student more prominent than the other, the more prominent student should be stationed to the Rebbe's right, the less prominent one to the Rebbe's left. So again, we find that apparently it's not problematic for a less prominent person to be to his superior's right. There's nothing, you know, inherently problematic about that. And the Baisa brings a precedent for this. Points out, V'chein matzinu v'shlosha malachi asher shebo etzel Avram. So we find in the case of the three angels who visited Avram Avinu, Michael be'emtza, Gavriel b'yamino, Raphael b'smalo. The angel Michael in the middle, he was the greatest of the three, Gavriel b'yamino, the angel Gavriel to his right, and Raphael to his left, because Gavriel was the next greatest and Raphael is beneath Gavriel. So how could Rav Yehuda say that it's totally improper for a subordinate to be to his superior's right? The Gemara answers, Targumu Rav Shmuel bar Papa, k'made the Rav Adda. How specifically should these students position themselves if walking in the road with their Rebbe? They don't go right to the side of the Rebbe, no, but a bit behind him. Kadeshi is kasabu rabo. So in a sense, they're like covering the Rebbe. If they do it in that way, then Rav Yehuda will agree that it's proper. That's how we could reconcile these teachings. The Gemara objects, V'atanya mahalich keneged rabo arezebur. There's a braisa that says that one who walks right alongside his teacher is a boor. It says, when he walks behind his teacher, is deemed to be from among the arrogant. So the Rebbe is saying, and walking behind the Rebbe is no good either. The Gemara answers, the mitzadeh it's dude. The proper way to do it is that the inferior, the student, the subordinate, should be off to the side, like diagonally behind his superior. If he does it that way, then no principle of Derech Eretz is violated. The Mishnah stated that V'kalpi ha'isa sham u'bash ne'garolos. Chest was there next to the goats with two lots in it. Where brings a brisa on this? Tan Rabbanan, the Rabbanan taught ne brisa. The pasuk there in Acharemo states V'nosan Aaron o'shnei asi'irim garolos. And Aaron, who was a Kohen Gadol, of course, shall place lots upon the two goats. Rice estate says will be derived below Gorolo shall call davar. The lots may be made of any material. The Rice continues, Yachol Yitin Shnai Mazev Shnai Mazev. Perhaps the correct interpretation of the Pasuk, on the basis of the plural wording, it says lots on the goats. So perhaps it means the Kohen Gadol places two lots on each goat, which would mean you'd have two lots which say Lashem, and two lots of Shein Lazazel, and you put one pair on each goat, Talmid Lomer, Gorel Echel Lashem, Gorel Echel Lazazel. To dispel such a reading, the pasuk continues by saying it's one lot for Hashem, one lot for Azazel. That is, the pasuk clarifies that Ein kan Lashem elagor alechad. There's only one Lashem lot. Ein kan Lazazel alechad. And there's only one Lazazel lot. The Raisa says there's still room for confusion. For Yochel, perhaps the pasuk means as follows: Yitin shel shem vishel azazel alzeh, vishel shem vishel azazel alzeh. Perhaps we're supposed to end up placing both lots on both goats. And the impetus for such a reading, again, is that plural language. Why else does it say goral los? So maybe that's how we do it. Talmud lomar goral echad lahashem. But no, the language here of goral echad, if it said just goral by itself, it would be clear from that that it's a one goral per goat. Yet it adds, it reinforces further and says echad, only one, to dispel the previously suggested reading. No, you don't end up putting both lots on each goat. Rather, ein kan Lashem ela echad, ein kan Lazazel ela echad. Ultimately, the Lashem lot is put on one, and the Lazazel lot is put on the other, and that's it. Im kein matam lomer goralos. What then is the plural language of goralos teaching us? Sheyu shavin. That language comes to teach that the girls should be fashioned in a way that they are identical, other than what's actually inscribed on each of them. That is, shelo yase echad shel zav, echad shel kasef, for example. You shouldn't make one of gold, the other of silver, or echad gadol v'echad katan, or one larger than the other. For this would jeopardize the integrity of the lottery. It's supposed to be just randomly selected. We cannot set it up in a way in which the kohen gadol can tell, you know, which one is which. Now, the Raisa mentioned Garola Shel Kol Davar. These lots may be made of any material. The Gemara wonders Pita. Isn't this obvious? Why would we think otherwise? The Gemara answers Lo Tzricha L'Tanya. It's not so obvious, as is pointed out by the following Raisa. Raisa says Lefi Shematzinu Batzitz Shashem Kosev Alav Vehu Shel Zahav. Since in the case of the tzitz, the golden headplate worn on the forehead of the Kohen Gadol, Hashem's name is inscribed on that. The tzitz, of course, must specifically be made of gold. Yochel Av Zekein. So I might have thought, since one of the lots has Hashem's name on it, it too must be made of gold. Talmud Lomar teaches otherwise. We have in our pasuk Goral Goral. It repeats the word Goral to indicate that Riba, expansion of potential candidates for what material the lots can be made. If you can make it from anything, for instance, riba shel zayis, riba shel egos, riba shel ishkaroa. Make it of any variety of wood, olive wood or nut wood or boxwood, any of those materials would be fine. The Mishnah related how the Kohen Gadol ben Katan refashioned the kiyor wash basin. He upgraded that, so went from having two spouts to 12. The Gemara brings a brisa on this. Tana was taught in a brisa. Why was this an improvement? Kadesh Yushneim Asr Echa Vakohanim Asukin Vatamid Mekachin Yedein Ragleyan Mevasachas. With Ben Katan's upgraded kiyor, now the entire party of 12 Kohanim would participate in the morning Tamid service, would be able to prepare for that by washing their hands and feet at the kiyor all at once. Remembers another brisa which refers to the previous version of the kiyor for Ben Katan's improvement. Tana was taught in a brisa. Shachris v'miluo mikadesh yadav v'raglav min ha'elyon. In the morning, when the kiyor was full, the Kohen would perform the kiddush yadayim v'raglayim from the upper spout. Arvis v'yiridaso mikadesh yadav v'raglav min ha'tachton. In the evening, when the water level of the kiyor, of course, was much lower, then he would utilize the other spout, which was located closer to the bottom of the kiyor. The Mishnah mentioned v'yafuasa muchni lakiyor. Ben Katan also had a special machine made to lower and raise up the kiyor from an underground spring. And this, as we explained, avoided any problem of lina disqualification. We asks, my muchni, what is this machine that Ben Katan made? Amar Abaye, Gilgala Dehave Meshakale. Some kind of a contraption that included a wheel with which he would lower and submerge the kiyor into the spring each night, so that it wouldn't become disqualified under the issue of lina. The Mishnah said that Munbaz HaMelech Asa Kol Yido Sekelim. Munbaz HaMelech and all of the handles of the utensils of the Beis HaMikdash that were used in Yom Kippur made out of gold. The Gemara wonders, Why do you only make the handles of gold? If dinu lidid hudasav, why not make even the utensils themselves of gold? Turning to Amud Beis, the Gemara answers, Amar Abaye midos sakinin. The answer is because Munbas HaMelech made the aforementioned improvements to the knives. Of course, the actual blades of the knives couldn't be made of gold. The Gemara challenges this. Meisfeb, Ayit says in Ebraisa, Af hu asa kane kelim ve'ogne kelim. Munbas HaMelech also made the bases of the different utensils and their grips, vidos kelim, vidos sakinin, and the handles of utensils, and the handles of the knives, shel Yom Kippurim, shel Zav, all of those items that we use in Yom Kippur, he made those into gold. So the problem is that Raisa clearly separately mentions the knife handles and the utensil handles. The question returns, why only make the handles of the utensils out of gold? Why not make the utensils themselves, the whole thing, gold? My answer is Targuma Abaye Bekatasa Dinarge Vechatzine. When the Raisa mentions handles of utensils, it specifically refers to other utensils where only the handle practically be made of gold. For example, axes and adzes. So again, only the handle could have been made of gold. The Mishnah said that Hilani Imo Asasa Nivresha Shazav. The mother of Munbas HaMelech, Hilani, had a great golden candelabrum made and placed over the entrance to the Heichal. Where brings a brisa about this Tana? Was Tana a brisa? The Bishosh Achama Zarachas Nitzotzus Yotzi Mimena VeHakol Yodin Sheigias Man Kriyashma. When the sun would begin to shine in the morning at sunrise, sparkles would emanate from Helane's candelabrum, and all would thereby know that the time to recite Kriyashma arrived. The Gemara questions this Meisve from a brisa. The brisa says, if a person were to recite Kriya Shema at the same time as that would be recited by either the Mishmar of Kohanim bringing the morning Tamid or the Mamed, a group of non-Kohanim who would be present for the Avodah of the Beis HaMikdash as the representatives of the rest of Bnei Yisrael, he will not have fulfilled the mitzvah of reciting the morning Shema in the ideal manner. Mipnei she'anji mishmar mashkimin, for the Kohanim of the Mishmar recite the Shema before the ideal time. They recite it like after dawn, so they fulfill the obligation on the basic level, but preferably the Shema should be recited until sunrise because of the tasks upon the anji mishmar for the morning Tamid. They say the Shema before sunrise, whereas the Imamid people, those representatives, they recite the Shema later than the ideal time, sometime after sunrise, because they're busy attending the morning avodas, being present there, being focused on that. So the Brisa is telling us that the people who would be there at the Beis HaMikdash, serving at the Beis HaMikdash, didn't recite the Kriya Shema right at the most ideal time at sunrise, who then benefited from the sparkles of Helene's candelabrum that indicated sunrise, the ideal time to recite the Shema. Amar Abaye, the Shar Amid of Yerushalayim. Abaye answers that the sparkles from the candelabrum were useful for all the other residents of Yerushalayim. And they too would be able to see the sparkling chandelier, and this would be a sign for them to know, oh, now it's time to say the Shema. And since they're not busy with the Avod in the Beis HaMikdash, they would go ahead and recite the Shema then. The Mishnah stated that Hilani made another contribution. She had a golden tablet fashioned upon which the Parsha of Sotah was written, and this was useful for the Kohen. We could use that to copy down the Psukim you had to write on the parchment when conducting the Sotah procedure. One seeks to infer something from the Mishnah, but a controversial issue. Shema's Mina Kosvin Megillah Latinok Lehislamed Ba. Seems we could infer from the Mishnah it's permitted to, for example, write a section of the Torah on a scroll for the purpose of teaching a young child how to read the Psukim. Meanwhile, this issue is the subject of great controversy, as we find in Masechtas Gittin, the question of whether it's permitted to write only part of the Torah. So can we infer from the Mishnah that in the opinion of the Tanna of our Mishnah, that is allowed? The Gemara says, not necessarily. Amar Reish Lakish Mishum Rabbi Yanai says, it could be that the tablet that Hilani had fashioned didn't have the complete psukim, rather ba'alef beis, where they used individual letters of the aleph beis to represent each word. I mean, they would write the first letter of each word of the pasuk, and that would be enough to remind the kohen of the correct words of the pasuk for him to write down. But possibly our Mishnah agrees with the stringent position that it would be prohibited to write down a portion of the Torah with a complete psukim in that portion, where questions this suggested reading of the Mishnah. A Meisvei from a Braisa, which says, Kishehu kosev roev hikosev mashikosev betavla. Raisa states that when the Kohen Gadol would write down the Sota passage, he would copy down what was inscribed on the tablet under discussion. So the Raisa seems to say that he would write down exactly what he saw on the tablet, meaning that the complete psukim were written there. So again, it would seem to prove that our Mishnah takes a lenient stance on the issue of writing just a portion of the Torah down. The Gemara deflects this by saying, Ema roev v'kosev kimashikosev betavla. You can interpret the Braisa to mean that the Kohen Gadol wrote down roughly what was written on the tablet. It doesn't necessarily mean that it was word for word, that the complete words are written on the tablet. Could be like Rosh Lakish suggested above, that they did it with just the first letter of each word, and this reminded the Kohen of the correct words to write down. The Gemara questions this from another Braisa, Meisvei. It says in another Braisa, the Kishu Kosev Roa Vikosev Mashikosev Batavla. Starts out the same as the previous Braisa. Kohen Gadol would write down the Sota passage by looking at what was written on the tablet. And then the Braisa continues, Uma Kosev Batavla. And what was written on the tablet? Braisa says, well, the Pasuk that starts, Im Shachav Ish Osach. You know, if this Sota accused of adultery and did commit the sin in question, then these are the curses that shall happen. And also, Vim Lo Shachav. The rest of the passage there, the other Pasuk that starts, if she really was innocent, and etc. And also the language of the passage there, of im satis, if you did stray and do this, etc. Im lo satis, if you didn't stray, etc. So this braisa strongly indicates that the actual psukim with the complete words were written on the tablet. But the Gemara deflects this proof as well by saying, no, hasam, tirmik delam ches beseirugin. Could say the braisa actually means that the words inscribed on the tablet alternated in the sense that it would quote, yes, the complete words of the beginning of each of the psukim, but you wouldn't have an entire pasuk with the complete words of any one of the psukim. Rather, just write the complete words of the beginning portion of the pasuk, and then it will be aleph beis for the rest, just the first letter of the remaining words of each pasuk. Accordingly, you still can't bring any proof from the Mishnah that it agrees with the lenient position that one is allowed to commit to writing a portion of the actual psukim with the complete words of the Torah.
You've been listening to RealClearDaf.com. Visit us online for resources or to dedicate a shiur. To speak with Rabbi Wise, call 855-ASK-RCD1. That's 855-275-7231.